Matt Farrell, thanks for joining the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be here.
All right, so let's dive into it. So you're the director of marketing at Aramark. Can you give us a quick rundown of the company? What do you guys do? Who do you serve? And then we'll dive into some other things around some of the challenges in the MRO industry, like labor shortages, parts availability, things like that. And then kind of circle back to what you're doing with the YouTube channel. And then also we'll get into some content marketing stuff here too. But yeah, if you could start with the company, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Aramark is a family run business established in 1971 in Wichita, Kansas. We have three different divisions. The first division is where we started with Aramark Labs. We specialize in power plant indicators and fuel system components for anything from regional aircraft down through general aviation. We have a distribution business, Wilco Aircraft Parts. We purchased about 4 years ago, rebranded it into Aramark Wilco. So that's the distribution side of our house. And then we have a manufacturing side through Aramark Labs and also another acquisition, TCO Manufacturing, which is the manufacturer of static wicks for turboprop singles and twins. So we cover the gamut from MRO, distribution, and manufacturing.
Okay. And then for each of those divisions of the company, who are the primary customers that you're serving?
The primary customers are OEMs are our biggest customers and number one customers that we encounter more often than not. From there, we get into the MRO facilities themselves, and they're into fleet operators and private owners.
Okay. All right. So you kind of have the different aspects of the chain.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because of the manufacturing side, that puts us in front of the OEMs on a regular basis. And we have that connection for all of our services, whether it be MRO, distribution, or manufacturing. And so we're able to play a role in everyone's supply chain.
Okay. And are you guys, and for those components that you're manufacturing, is that for new aircraft off the line, or are these for replacement parts or both? How does that work?
That's a great question, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we do have a manufacturing side of the house that's for in-production aircraft. And one of the niches that we serve is we've done a phenomenal job of doing contract manufacturing for other OEMs, and not just, hey, give it to us and let us build it, but we assume the entire process from sustaining engineering to parts obsolescence issues, and we really have a team that's built around maintaining that product line and providing a support solution until its end of life. And as you know, most of these parts really never have an end of life if they can be supported. So that's, we have a really great knack for doing that.
Okay. That's great. And so, if I can ask too, why the acquisition of those companies at that time, how did that kind of play into where you guys are trying to take the company now?
So as a MRO facility, like I said, we started as Aramark Labs, and most of our gauges that we're working on today are steam gauges, as most people refer to them these days. So that's a product line that, while it's still providing consistent revenue and we're growing that product line, we see the need that, you know, as more flat panels go into aircraft, more of those instruments are coming out, and we need to, you know, reinvest in our company in a new direction. And so that's why we've gone with distribution and manufacturing. The manufacturing gives us opportunities to not only manufacture products, but more MRO opportunities as well.
Okay. And then does that include like more digital components or things that can be plugged into these flat displays and things along those lines? Is that what you mean?
We consider ourselves to be electromechanical experts. So anything that we can manufacture that's can fall under the realm of electromechanical, we're involved in. I mean, we do things as simple as cabin lighting signs. We do backup battery power supplies. We have landing gear control handles. We can do complex electronic navigation systems. It really runs the full gamut. We consider ourselves to be a high mix, low volume, and boutique manufacturer. I know that's a lot of fancy words, but we really pride ourselves on, you know, being very agile and being able to adapt to the customer's needs.
Okay. And when they're going through these installation processes and, you know, basically what's the process of supporting them through that, whether it's troubleshooting or guidance on installation or repair? How does that work? I guess from start with the MRO perspective, how does that relationship work?
So from the MRO perspective, what we're going to encounter is someone that has a need for a repair or an overhaul of an instrument or an accessory, and they're going to remove that. And depending on their schedule is how we respond. Aramach prides itself on our customer service and our customer support. So we don't charge AOG fees, and we don't try to make our problems our customer's problems. So when you call us, the first thing we're going to ask you is, when do you need it back? And we manage our workflow through our shop to be adaptable to your schedule. That's not always possible. Sometimes these instruments have run-in periods or drawdown procedures that require them to be in our facility for a number of hours. And so we can't physically respond because of the constraints of the IPP. But one thing that we try to do is understand what your needs are and respond to those needs.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I was just curious, you know, as you go through the process and you talk to different component repair shops or even just MROs doing overhauls and working with the manufacturers or the supply chain pieces, it's interesting to see the different areas where support is needed or a component is needed, but it's not there, or it's, you know, being delivered, or there's a backlog of, you know, or you know, delays in getting those parts and things like that. I guess one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, what trends are you seeing in terms of parts availability, getting these components to customers? I do hear across all of our customers that we work with, supply chain issues and parts availability, things like that. I guess if you had to put your finger on what you think some of the issues are, things that you're hearing, how would you describe it?
That's a multifaceted answer for us. So on the MRO side, because our product line is a mature product line, for the most part, those components are in the life cycle or in the production cycle. So we don't see a lot of delays. Some areas that we'll see delays are parts that are still in production, and those parts are competing for space in the manufacturing process itself. And so we see more supply chain issues in new production than we do in MRO. For the new production side of the house, our manufacturing side of the house, the things that we're doing is we're going out on a limb for a lot of our customers, and we're looking at their forecast and trying to understand their forecast and predict the orders before they even place the order. We've gotten caught with that a few times, and we've had to pay for inventory. But for the most part, we've been able to predict it, and that's been a value add that we can add to several of our customers. Several of our customers that we manufacture for are prime suppliers to some of the largest OEMs building some of the largest aircraft. And it's us knowing and understanding the airframe manufacturers' production rates that have helped our contract manufacturers meet their deadlines, because we've actually put ourselves ahead of the contract manufacturer to be ready to go for the airframe supplier, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. So you're looking basically two vendors into the future,
exactly.
Two steps into the future, trying to predict that piece so you can give the intermediary the things that they need in order to be able to deliver the final product on time. Is that fair?
No, that you said that very well. Said it better than I did. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
One of the things that drives that, and I'm sure that your listeners can identify this, is unfortunately, we deal with a lot of turnover in the supply chain side, whether it be on the airframe side or maybe a contract manufacturer that we're contracting to. So we have to, if there's turnover and we're missing a representative, we have to step in and fill that role. And that's, again, part of the services that we provide by supporting the entire solution. We have experience and we know how to fill that role. And then at the same time, when someone new comes in, we try to gently guide them and help them understand our role in their process as well, and bring them up to speed on what we're doing for them and what we can actually do to help their job easier.
And so what would an example of like a kind of role where you're seeing that turnover happen? And then from there, what are some of the downstream consequences that you guys see that you help fill, but most people might not realize is happening because of that?
Absolutely. So let's just use the term contract administrator. So we'll have a contract administrator that we're building a part for their company, and they're prime to an airframe manufacturer. And that contract administrator, there's turnover. So let's start with an absent. That position is open. They're trying to fill it. So our customer service team, we have a lot of experience in our customer service team, and we step in and fill that role from the standpoint of we understand the contract, we understand the delivery rates, and so we're able to provide visibility to whoever that superior is, that supervisor, and fill that role for them. Essentially, we're managing the contract for them in that role. And then when that position is filled and we have a new contact and new contract administrator comes on board, we're able to, because of our knowledge and our experience with dealing with them, we're with that company and that specific contract, we're able to bring them up to speed very easily and very quickly. And again, like I said, being in tune with where our parts are going downstream in supply chain, we have some, we're quite adept at predicting what we need and being able to keep that net new hire from being underwater from a paperwork and from an administration role.
It sounds like that would require a lot of relationship building and capital and having that connection there. So how, I guess through that process, right? Because you're working with the company that's building that and then delivering it to the OEM, let's mm-hmm. say. So you almost need the relationship in both places in order to be able to manage that. So I guess, how do you build that? Like, what is that process like of building that, keeping those lines of communications open? And I guess by nature of doing that, do you find yourself working with the same kind of companies pretty consistently, like building those relationships over time? I'm just kind of curious as you explain that.
Absolutely. So again, we're very fortunate at Aramark. We have very low turnover rate. I was visiting with someone just last week, and I told them, they asked how long I'd been at Aramark. And I said, well, I'm the new guy. I've been there 18 years. And that's the kind of organization we have. We have a lot of experience and a lot of connections that we've built as an organization. And so I don't want to use the word easy, but we certainly have the connections that we need to be able to provide the support, the level of support that we want to provide to our customers, because that's what it comes back to. For us, yep. we have a standard that we set that we want to meet. And we recognize what we have to put in place to meet that standard. And if we don't have those connections, and if we're not able to have those frank conversations, we're not going to meet that standard. And that's unacceptable to us.
And so going back to the turnover piece, right? I talked to a lot of MRO owners or leaders and DOMs, and the constant theme, and it's been a theme of this show since we started it last year, is labor shortages. And that's kind of come in flavors of it's a labor shortage or it's actually due to turnover rate, probably a combo of both and maybe a combo of other factors. So I guess, what are you seeing out there in the industry in terms of the labor shortage, labor rates? Like, what impact is that happening? And then where do you think some of this stuff is stemming from?
For us, you need to understand how technical our technicians are and the expertise that they have in these instruments. So it's very difficult for us to find someone off the street that can come in and pick this up. So if we have an opportunity to pick up a seasoned technician, then we will jump on that with both feet. The other thing that's crucial for us is cross training. We have to be able to cross train all of our employees in other roles for that reason. And it's not just the labor shortage reason, but it goes back to that agility that I mentioned earlier. We want to be able to react to what your needs are when you call. So if I'm able to have a resource that's sitting on another bench that's doing something that may not have the turn time that I need today, I can grab that resource, put them on this bench, and we can get that instrument out and back for you. So for us, maintaining a consistent workforce is as much about agility in that customer support role as it is anything else. So we certainly are impacted by it. You know, we have a labor force with a lot of tenure, as I mentioned, and some of that labor force is retiring, and we hate to see that talent go out the door, but it's their turn. You know, they've earned that right, and I wish them well in their retirement. And we're working really hard to backfill that talent. One of the great things that we're able to do when we have brought on new contract manufacturing opportunities is a lot of times the lines that we are picking up, they are being shut down in the facilities where they're being manufactured. And we have a great track record of bringing those employees to Wichita and bringing them on board to be part of the Aramark family. And we've grown our workforce that way. So the acquisition of new contracts is much about adding to the bottom line, adding the personnel from those contracts is just as important as adding to the bottom line.
Okay. All right. So acquisition's been one way of increasing the workforce and being able to do that. So before we dive into, you know, getting the next generation of the workforce in and things like that, what are some of the ways that you guys are managing that cross-training? Because I got to imagine that can't be super easy or straightforward given the highly technical nature of what you guys are doing. So what is that process? What are some of the things that you guys have done that's been successful on that front?
One of the most important things is the employees need to buy into what we're doing. And we're really fortunate that they understand the support that we're providing. You get in a comfort zone. You're used to working on the thing that you're working on, and you want to work on that, and you don't want to work on anything new. Maybe you don't want to learn reading schematics if you're a mechanical technician and you don't want to learn electronics. But we're really fortunate that the technician base is willing to support the customer. And so when you frame it in that point of mind, when you frame it in that view, they really step up. We're really proud of our workforce and our technicians and how they're willing to help out our customers. So that's the first and foremost, is that cultural, let's try something new. Let's do something out of our comfort zone. And then we have, again, because we have such tenure in our technicians, we have some great trainers for these products that can really bring the high level of quality and reliability to the repairs and overhauls and the manufacturing to produce the products and then to produce the products that we want to ship out, because our products go around the world. And that's something that I encounter on a regular basis. We're all face pricing pressure in the market, and everybody wants to know how competitive you are. And that's one thing that I have to explain to people is, you know, we're a 145 repair station. We have all the certifications under the sun, and we're willing to put an instrument in the box and send it around the world and stand behind it. So we're really proud of that. And we're very competitive, but we're also not a bargain basement shop for someone that's looking for that. That's not us. We do great work and we stand behind it. So we charge a fair price for that.
Okay. And so you've got to have the willingness to, you have to have the culture where it's the willingness to learn. Absolutely. And then you have to have the expertise in house to be able to teach. And then I guess another factor of that would be how do you get it? How do you get the culture to where the people with experience are willing to teach the people that don't have that experience and kind of build that into, the culture itself? Just curious.
You have to frame it from the point of view of, you know, have you ever gotten in your car with a destination in mind and your car break down and you not be able to make that destination? You know, we help people get to where they want to go. You know, it's when you frame it in a personal story and you help your employees understand, look, these are people who are using these airplanes. They're moving either a package from point A to point B that might be your Christmas present. They're moving their family from point A to point B, or maybe they're a charter company that's generating revenue off these flights. You know, you're an integral part to making that happen. And so framing it in a way that you're not just fixing a widget, you're not just doing mm-hmm. something that sends down the road. We provide visibility. And that's one of the things that I do, you know, as a marketing director. It's not just external marketing, but we do internal marketing. You know, we share those successes with the team and we rally together as a team to make those successes happen, because our team understands that we're an integral part of helping these airplanes fly. That's our motto, is we keep you flying, and that we is everybody in that building.
That's a good point, is you kind of have to tell your own team what your team has been doing and then what impacts it's having. We try to do that here because, you know, it's really easy to get bogged down with all the negative stuff, right? Like there's, you know, it's we do software, so there's no shortage of tickets or things or help that we need, or we found this little issue, can you fix it? All that kind of stuff. All the way up to every once in a while, you have like a, hey, we found these bugs and it's really critical and we've got to jump on it and we get it solved the same day. But it's, you know, all hands on deck. You got to do what you got to do. So it's easy to get lost in that constant, almost like the beat down, right? You know, everything is negative and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes you do have to remind everybody like, hey, hold on. I just got this email from this customer. We delivered this thing way faster than they thought, and they're super happy. And now they've actually been able to, like, we put out a new integration that we did, and it's like, oh, they were able to actually become profitable because they didn't end up having to hire this other person to process, you know, data into their accounting software. So we built a solution for that. And then this guy is super thankful to us that we were able to do that. I know we got a couple other people that were really mad today, but we did that. And then, oh, by the way, here's this other stuff that we did. And here's another person that's happy with it. So it's, you constantly have to remind everybody, hey, what you're doing is actually having an impact. And here's some proof, you know.
That's exactly right. And help your team remember the wins. You know, we've got a technician that's struggling with a difficult repair, and you know, every company is about numbers and analytics. And in this particular instance, this work order is going beyond the analytics. You know, you've got to remind him or her about their wins to help them understand that, you know, this is just a bump in the road. You're going to knock this one out and you're get on the next one and it's going to be back to normal. And so, you know, just keeping the team, the frame of reference of what's in front of them today, what they did yesterday and what we get to look forward to as the team is really important.
Yeah. And so the next generation of technicians and where that's heading, how are you guys looking into the future there?
Well, our skill set that we require is going to take someone that has the fortitude to dive into a problem, diagnose a problem that's literally 6 inches away from their face a lot of times, and be able to jump into a problem like that. So it takes a person with a really unique skill set. And we do have a number of trainees that we're training right now, and we're really happy we're seeing success with them. But we're always looking for someone else. You know, there's no question that we want to add to the team and be able to address that. For us, in our particular role, it's very rare to see a very young person in their 20s come into this role. It's just the skill set that's required is going to take a mechanical skill set that has some maturity to it, and certainly an electronics background that has quite a bit of maturity to it. So from the next generation, you know, that's really tough for us because we're looking just because of the requirements, job requirements going into it. We need somebody that's got some experience. I know that on the airframe and power plant side, there is a pipeline of students coming out of high school going into the Part 147 schools, and I see that on a regular basis. And that's a very important transition that we as a MRO community, and I realize that, you know, instruments and manufacturing on our side is a little bit different, but I know you touch a lot of players in the MRO market, and let them know that anything they can do to cultivate those kids coming out of airframe and power plant school is really going to benefit the industry going forward.
Yeah. And I talked to some of the owners, so this isn't like not a sample size of everybody, but I've had some deeper conversations with several owners who do experience that high turnover rate from the next generation of technicians. But it is funny, almost every single conversation, they're like, but this one kid, they're great. They show up every day and I'm just giving them more and more stuff. They'll mess up things, but they're putting in the work and they're willing to do it. And so, you know what? I'm okay that they're not going to get this perfect, and I'll just keep investing in them. But, you know, keeping those employees around is tough. You do have to create growth paths, and you do have to create a place where they can continue to actually learn and grow and take on new responsibilities. And that's not for everybody, right? It's funny to talk to some of these DOMs or the owners who are at a lot of these MROs that are in general aviation or working on business jets. And it's a very dynamic environment with Absolutely. Where a lot of our customers are. And that's not for everybody, because they'll hire people that came from the airlines, and they may have been doing one very specific thing on one part of the process. But once you throw them into the kind of madness of general aviation MRO, it's tough to manage. So there's a lot of moving pieces. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. There's a ton of people that are retiring. And one of the things I'm concerned with is not just, hey, there's a bunch of less people, but that knowledge gap is going to be huge.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's something that you want to preserve as much as possible. And, you know, at Aeromoc, we're faced with that as well. And that's where, you know, we try to make as many notes and service notes as we can. And, you know, that's one of the interesting things about a 145 repair station is, you know, the FAA frowns on having additional work instructions to the CMM. But, you know, at the same time, there's some idiosyncrasies about things that tribal knowledge, if you will, that we need to make sure that people pass along. And it's part of the on-the-job training that we have. And, you know, something I want to speak to that you touched on is being a young technician. I started out in this business at 18 years old, sitting on a wing or sitting on a wheel of a landing gear, handing screwdrivers to an avionics technician. And, you know, my big responsibility at the avionics shop was to sweep the hangar every Friday and make sure it was cleaned up. We're going to mess up. You know, when the first time I was turned loose on an airplane, my supervisor was looking right over my shoulder and wanted to make sure that I was going to do as good a job as he would do. And he made me do it again and again and again until I got it right. So we're going to mess up. It's really important that as we transition from the young person with their hair on fire, trying to fix everything in the world, we've got to start playing a mentor role. And that's something that I've never viewed myself as a mentor. I don't know that I have that much to offer, but it seems like the more that the gray hair showed up, the more I find myself in a situation saying, well, you know, you might consider doing it this way. And that's what guys did for me. And I'm really grateful for the mentors that I've had in this business, because they played such a major role, either in the technical side that have my technical background, my management side, my sales side. They've all played a critical role to bring me to where I am today, sitting in front of you and having this conversation about MRO. So we need to remember that role as a mentor. We need to remember what it was like when we were coming up in the business so we can all kind of share and experience the community. That's what I love most about aviation is the community. If you see any of my posts online and the stuff that I do, the content that I put out, it's enjoy this community. It's the greatest business that you could ever dream to be in. You get to watch airplanes. You get to see them take off and land and experience the air shows and the full gamut of it. So take advantage of that. Engage in it because it is a wonderful community.
Yeah. And if you can kind of keep your head down, you can get some pretty cool experiences, you know, just working at these different companies and software. I've got the opportunity to travel primarily all across the US, but still very cool. A company is paying for you to travel somewhere. And, you know, while you're there for work, you get to do other things and you get to experience stuff, but you also get to see like a view into the world that you otherwise might not have gotten. Like there are certain things that I've gone to visit customers that I was just like, oh my God, I didn't even know. Mm-hmm. I had no idea this existed at all. And now I get to be a part of it. Like things in aviation, just going to flight departments. I've gotten to go on the tarmac at Nellis Air Force Base while these guys are repairing aircraft just because I supported a software that this company used. And now I'm on a tarmac looking at fighter jets taking off maybe 1,000 feet away from me. And just all these kind of cool experiences that if you don't dive into it, you kind of can miss out on. I've been very lucky in that sense, but you do get some cool opportunities if you can dig into it. So
absolutely,
that's my little PSA for anybody considering.
That's a great, you bring up a great point. And, you know, for people that are wanting to be airframe and power plant mechanics, I think one of the most intriguing roles that I've come across are the guys that go out and do AOG aircraft repair on site. You know, they either drive there or they fly in and they're getting an aircraft that's stranded on an airfield somewhere up and running and back out. So, you know, as a young person coming out of school, that would have been right up my alley. You know, put me on the road and let me go experience the world and fix some airplanes in some remote places and have to be kind of MacGyver to know and understand how we're going to get these things fixed and back in the air. So I think that's an exciting part of the AMT side that someone could take advantage of.
Yeah. And also what I've been seeing too, is just, it's the AOG stuff is actually a great vehicle right now for starting your own business. So if you're looking for like a career path and it's like, okay, I'll go work for an OEM or I'll go work for a shop, get some experience, maybe get 3, 5, 8 years of experience. If you do want to start a business, it's going to be hard as hell, but you can do it and you could do it with much less overhead than a physical location in a lot of places. So it's interesting to see the different kind of career paths popping up in the industry so far. But you mentioned putting together this content and the marketing and everything like that. Before we were recording, you said it's been kind of the last year you've been really diving into this heavy and even promoting that to the next generation that's coming up. So I'm curious, even just for me personally, what's that process been like and what have you seen as kind of a result of doing some of this stuff?
That process has been the proverbial drinking from a fire hose.
Yep.
So, I considered myself to be pretty good, and I use that term loosely, at PowerPoint and could navigate spreadsheets pretty well. And I tease that my computer was highly tuned and perfectly set up for Excel spreadsheets. And now I'm demanding 4K editing out of it and having to capture audio files. And, you know, I'm the kind of guy that thought I would show up with my $30 you know, mini cassette recorder and hit record and be able to produce content for people to consume. And so I can tell you more ways how not to create content
yep.
than I can on how to create content, but it's been an exciting journey. So I started off with the YouTube channel, The Flying Salesman, and that's kind of, that was where I started. And I really, it took me a long time to get there, unfortunately, but I embrace the fact that we have this airplane that I fly for Aeromoc. I call on our customer base and I get to go and do these exciting things that you mentioned. And that may be something that, you know, I haven't shared with your listeners yet, but I fly a Cessna 210 around the country and talk to airplane mechanics and explain to them, just like I am to you, what we can do for them from an MRO side and a manufacturing side. And so I get all these great experiences, and I said, I'm going to share these with the public. And with our acquisition of Wilco, I've been going to Sonnenfun and Oshkosh and experience talking to the other pilots and hearing their stories. And I thought, well, let's take some of those people along with me on these flights. And I thought, when it started out, I thought I would be able to take them into hangar, show them different operations and different airplanes. And it has morphed into kind of what I was touching on earlier about that mentor program. So now it's more about me telling you where I'm going, why I'm going there. And then I'll share the tips of how I'm pre-flight planning or what we're doing along the way to navigate the weather. So it's kind of me giving back. I always wished that I'd had a 48-year-old pilot to sit next to me and kind of help me navigate some of these scenarios. And now I'm the 48-year-old pilot and figure I better give back. And so the YouTube channel is where it started. And then the Aeromoc had a need for some content marketing and realized that to do that, we needed to raise our game. We wanted to do it from somebody who had industry experience. We had worked with some outside agencies, and you know, for them to speak aviation was difficult to convey and try to train them and teach them. And so it was easier for us to do it ourselves. And so I jumped into it with both feet and have really enjoyed it. And we've seen some great benefit from it as well. So it's been the full gamut of everything from video production to infographics to social media, and really trying to keep up with what's going on in the market today.
You just perfectly summarized my whole experience going through content marketing and all that kind of stuff too. So, and especially your point about, I could tell you way more ways to not do things than maybe I could tell you on exactly how to do it. But it's interesting how it evolves. I'm curious, as you go through and you do this, and is there a sense before you put something out, maybe you don't have the imposter syndrome, maybe it's not to that level, but do you have anything before you put these kind of resources out that make you go like, am I really qualified to put this out? Is this the right way? Like, what are people going to think about it? Is that any... Or maybe you've gotten over that now, but did that come up along the way of doing all this stuff?
Oh, absolutely. And especially for me doing the flying videos, I'm not a flight instructor. So, you know, I felt like that was a credential that could potentially harm the viewers and I certainly don't want to convey something that someone's going to take either. I've gotten it wrong and they're going to do it wrong, or they've misconstrued it. So I've had that concern. And I was speaking with another YouTuber, and I asked him that question, and he was just real matter of fact. He says, what does it matter if you have a CFI or not? I said, well, you know, I don't have those letters. And he said, well, you know, is your information, is it valuable? And I said, well, I see value in it. I got value out of what I've learned or this mistake that I made. And he said, that's what your viewers want to see. They want to see somebody that's authentic, that represents the information for what it is, and that they can use it to improve how their workflow in an airplane or something like that. And especially when it comes to content marketer and, you know, professional title and that sort of thing. You know, I'm the first one to tell you, I'm very transparent. These are my skill sets. This is what I can do. These are the things that I've done. and I'll let my work speak for itself at this point. So I certainly had those doubts. And now, you know, I just give you a tip. I tell you, hey, this is how I set this up in ForeFlight. This is what I do. And I love the engagement. I get more out of the engagement and from any content that I create than I do creating the content, because I'm yep. learning. I'm learning from the people that I interact with. And I'm a big believer in the aviation community. So it's, to me, interacting online with comments and that sort of thing is just as much fun as standing in a booth at Oshkosh and listening to someone tell me about a RV8 that they're building, or, you know, a set of lights that they want to put on their airplane. I just geek out about it. I love the people. So yeah. That's what drives me and what I enjoy the most.
Yeah. It's, I think it's important to have that voice in your head that does make you check yourself and say like, hey, I'm not a CFI. Is this like, I don't want to cause problems, but also mm-hmm. I don't want to not say this because I think it's useful. And I, you know, I get that all the time. I'm not an aircraft technician, you know, mm-hmm. and you don't want me touching a plane. That's for sure. But I've been around these shops. I've worked with the technicians, the DOMs, different businesses, like all this stuff for a long time. And I understand how software plays in, and I understand the issues that go along with it. So I can speak on that stuff, but it does take a while in order to get over that, I'll call it imposter syndrome piece, you know?
Yeah.
And then once
yeah.
you get in the flow, it definitely gets easier. It'll be there when you start, right before you hit record or right before you start typing up the blog post. But, you know, just coming back to, hey, actually this is useful. I did learn this. And then putting it out there too is a good test, because you're not always right, and you do get people that give you feedback, but then I don't know. I've noticed it opens up some pretty interesting conversations. And I mean, business wise too, just from a, like if I didn't do this podcast, we wouldn't be having this conversation, and
that's right.
And vice versa. And then we'll put this out and it's marketing, and your business yep. gets tagged and mine gets tagged. So it's actually like a great business tool in that way as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you notice that side of it too?
Absolutely. You know, all the content that I've created has created opportunities. I use that. I don't yep. want to say it's created dollars, because
no,
that's,
but it's opportunities.
That's
exactly well
said. Right. And that's yeah. that's something that I've had a conversation with our senior leadership about, is, and I use the term clicks to dollars. You know, you have this mentality that if you spend a dollar on marketing, you want to see X dollars returned in sales. And so, one of the things that our senior leadership has seen is we've definitely seen our brand image grow in the marketplace. And that's really been a benefit to us. You know, we've been a company that's been around since 1971. We have had astounding growth for a small family owned business, but we haven't been bought by private equity, and we haven't been, you know, part of mergers and that sort of thing. We've been a very humble and boutique company. And so sometimes we kind of get lost in the sea of waves out there. And this yep. has been a great tool for us for people to know and understand that we're still that company with that awesome support.
That's awesome, man. I'm glad it's shaking out that way. Yeah. So I guess before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want to touch on?
I don't think so. I mean, we've had a great conversation today, Chris. You know, I love being a part of this community, and anybody that's listening, I encourage you to encourage everybody around you to take advantage of it, take advantage of the experiences, and remember that the work that we're doing on MRO side is very important work. There's a safety aspect to it. There's lives behind what we do. And, you know, just enjoy your job, enjoy the industry, and always keep safety at the forefront of your mind. And we'll be great.
Yeah. And I know a couple safety compliance officers that would love to hear that last sentence that you just said. They'll be so happy. And so where can people get in touch with you?
You can reach out to me. I'm on all the social media channels. So if you just look for The Flying Salesman, you'll come across one of my socials. You can get me at Aeromach at mferrell@aeromach.com. and reach out. If you guys want to chat, talk aviation, talk airplanes, if you have questions about something you're troubleshooting, you mentioned that earlier about support, and we do. One of the information at Aeromoc is free. If any of the technicians listening to this podcast need information from us, give us a call. I mean, we understand you're working on something, you want it fixed, you need a pinout, you need a diagram. We'll help you out for sure. So reach out to me. Awesome. I'm here to help. We're a resource.
Cool. Well, thanks for doing this, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate being a part of it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right. See ya.